Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 14th of June. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday. We have another beautiful day, and we have a great panel. And I think if you stir, mix, and enjoy, it'll be quite a show. That's all I ask of you this morning. And I think much of our audience,
I think much of our audience
has already started the stir, mix, and enjoy part, so that's all right. Good morning and welcome. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get to the substance of the program. We'll talk about all things all the cool things that are going on, and by cool things, we mean things that make us go into the fetal position and stay in our rooms and not want to leave and turn the lights on. Ira Fussfeld is here. Good morning, sir. He has the. It's a great segue.
Yeah,
I'm
trying to come up with a joke, and I just couldn't do it.
He is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and it's always a pleasure to have you before our microphones. Good morning.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I'm looking forward to just sitting back and listening to my colleagues today, so I won't interrupt anymore.
No, you have.
We have to.
Bring
That's
you
part
in
of
for
the contract.
Reason.
Okay.
My God, if you're going to cash the check we give you, you have to.
All
step
right,
up to
I'll
the plate.
Try, but I don't want to step on anybody's toes.
Hey, look who's here. Malcolm Nance is here, counterterrorism expert and our good friend, MSNBC's very own, and we'll say WAMC's very own. Malcolm Nance, good morning, sir. How are
Always
you?
Always glad to make it to the roundtable. Is it an interesting day? Anything happened yesterday?
Yeah, no. Yeah, we don't have much to talk about. And Judith Henk is here. Judith is a former regional administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency when there was one, and we're thrilled to have you here.
Thanks,
this
Joe.
Morning.
Delighted to be
Very
here.
Very nice to have you with us. Alan Shartok is here as well. Good morning, Alan.
My pleasure, Joe. Where are we going to be tomorrow?
Well, that's the thing. So Malcolm and Judith would normally be here on Friday, as well as our friend Aaron, but we moved them to Thursday. I didn't take your spot.
No, that's good, because I know where I normally are on Friday. I'm listening at home.
Yeah. So tomorrow we're broadcasting from the Berkshire, what was the Berkshire Theater Festival, now the Berkshire Theater Group, but what was the Berkshire Theater Festival celebrating its 90th anniversary.
Wow.
90 years of great theater in the Berkshires. And we're going to be broadcasting from the Fitzpatrick Stage in Stockbridge tomorrow, and we'll be talking about the past, present, and future of that wonderful arts institution. And our dear, dear friend Kate McGuire is our host, and we have an incredible lineup, and it's going to be quite a show. So we're very excited. That will be tomorrow morning. So that is why I asked if you guys could do today instead of tomorrow, and you both said yes, and we thank you very much for doing that.
Yeah, they didn't want us polluting, you know, the Berkshires on a Friday. That's all
well,
right.
Well, no, see, the theater folk, the thespians wanted to do the panel tomorrow. That was the thing.
They didn't want to talk about climate change and nuclear war.
It's all about the arts.
That's Malcolm and I.
It's all about the arts.
You say that like they're from the Shire.
This will be perhaps the more sobering program.
Well, what's the over and under on how long it takes before Trump's name comes up tomorrow? There's got to be a way that it'll be worked in.
Given the players,
pretty quick.
Yeah, 4 or 5 minutes.
Like Macbeth.
Yeah. I'm not worried about it. Yeah.
The arts will save us.
So that's all good. Let's go to the...
no response. Well, just keep going.
I don't know what's going to save us, Judith.
If the arts and music will help.
Okay. I think they'll help. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Joe, Robert asked a very provocative question.
What was Robert
just
want?
Started.
Robert wanted to know, ask Malcolm, good morning to all. To Malcolm, why did Kim really meet with Donald Trump, Bob?
Which
Blair?
Kim?
Kim Jong-un.
Not Kim Kardashian.
The dual Kim summits. Wow, we're starting off right with the questions.
Yeah, I guess we're
okay.
Not. Forget the.
Heck with you, Joe.
Yeah, forget with
Boy,
the plan.
Boy, wait till the thespians get a hold of you.
Yeah, there was a plan. That's all right.
Okay, then I apologize.
No,
we're getting in the way of your plan.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's simple, okay? You have a dictatorial, mass-murdering, nationally incarcerating, forced abortionist who, by manipulating the ego of the President of the United States, has now made himself equal on a world stage to the top global leaders by simple dint that he detonated atomic bombs. And what's even worse is we've learned this morning, for those of you who weren't listening late last night, Donald Trump seems to admire him personally. I mean, he said, oh, it's a tough country with tough people. And yeah, you know, essentially.
He took on a tough situation. Is what
tough situation. And, you know, hey, at 27 years old, you know, he came into the job, took over from his dad. Yeah, you know, it's easy to be a mass murdering dictator. What's hard is being a dignified president of the United States who upholds the values established by George Washington. And it appears that those are all out the window. Kim Jong-un now has gotten what his family has sought since 1954 at the end of the Korean War, which is they are now serious players and equal to the United States in Asia.
The president declared yesterday that North Korea is no longer a nuclear threat.
Yeah, I was on Ali Velshi yesterday, and I addressed that head on. These, okay, you know.
Whose show were you on?
Well, now you're on Joe Donahue.
They say on.
Save the good material for our show.
I was watching a rerun of The West Wing. Oh,
so that you could see a real president.
I tell you what, I don't digress. You watch, I'd never seen it when it was on live, and now I'm catching up to it. The familiarity of topics that are appearing in that program, which was done starting in 1999, could be today in the White House.
Yeah, but they're thoughtful and interesting and well-founded and based on our values.
Aaron Sorkin got them out of situations better than
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. You know, they say, psychologists say that underdeveloped children, like below the age of 1.5 years or when they're babies, if you put a piece of paper between them and an object, that object ceases to exist in their universe until over time they develop the concept that it's there, it's just hidden by something. Donald Trump hasn't quite figured that part out. He thinks if he says something, it's done. He constantly says this about Obamacare. Obamacare is finished. It does not exist in the United States anymore. He says that repeatedly. Tens of millions of people are still on this program. Same thing with these North Korean nukes. If he says that it's done and he shook hands with this guy, in his mind, they don't exist. Those weapons, we don't know what control they're under. If Kim Jong-un is one man, he could wake up with a bullet in his head tomorrow by the hardliners of his regime, and those weapons could be under the control of people who may be bent on seeing Nome, Alaska, or Seattle destroyed, or Tokyo. We don't know. Those weapons are there, 20 to 60 nuclear bombs. They have launch platforms that are operational and working. Anyone who says that who validates that worldview is living in a fantasy world.
One question for you before I let other members of the panel speak.
Yes.
And that is this whole idea of halting the exercises with the South Koreans. How bad of an idea is that? And because it seems that not only is Asia very concerned, but our military leaders who care are very, very concerned.
Yeah. You know, I spent years and years in the armed forces. We train nonstop so that should a crisis break out in a matter of minutes or hours, and they generally tend to break out rather swiftly, that we are proficient to go into battle that minute. When you're flying a B-1 bomber or a B-2 bomber, which is a $2 billion airplane, okay, the reason that we have them constantly landing and taking off and flying 16, 20 hours and dropping real or simulated ordnance is so that if Kim Jong-un wakes up dead and someone launches a full-scale invasion of South Korea, or Kim Jong-un does it himself, we have the ability to respond. Donald Trump seems to think that these are like casino chips and that all you have to do is just take them off the table. And what's even more insulting is his justification that we're going to save us some money. No, we spend money on the armed forces of the United States to ensure that the day that you need a B-1 Lancer to do a long-range, below-radar penetration mission to destroy nuclear weapons storage facilities, they can do it without crashing the plane into the ocean.
I don't disagree with anything Malcolm just said. Thank God for me, since I'm sitting right next to you. I don't disagree, but I want to raise.
There's a piece of paper between the two. Yes. Yeah.
I want to raise an additional point on a certain level. you know, we have to worry about both President Trump and Kim Jong-un. Both are pretty unstable, not experienced in the ways of the world. And it wasn't long ago when President Trump was referring to fire and fury and calling him Rocket Man and really escalating. So he kind of he created this crisis himself. And it's like an arsonist saying, I put the fire out. However, the little sliver of positive development I see here is maybe President Trump is now invested in not escalating tension with North Korea. I know this sounds a little naive, but knowing how Trump is operated, I mean, he was banging the war drums. I think this maybe, I mean, it's horrible, you know, the human rights, the track record there. But I think this may have calmed Trump down. The worry is when North Korea does something he doesn't like, he will overreact. But I think for all of us who want to see world peace and not nuclear annihilation, I think we've reduced the threat from the United States, at least.
But at what cost to our other allies and to elsewhere around the world?
Well, it shouldn't be a zero-sum game. I mean, it's kind of crazy that we have such hostility with Canada, with Mexico, with Germany, our partners in democracy.
With France.
With France. I mean, remember when Trump came down the escalator in Trump Tower calling Mexicans rapists and murderers? Yeah. I mean, we have a long history of cooperation with Mexico and Canada. So seeing President Trump embrace Erdogan, Duarte, Kim Jong-un, Putin, and dissing...
The World Cup will save that.
Yeah, and dissing our allies in democracy is a little nuts.
Trump is a self-serving narcissist. He does not see those nations as making value for him. All right? He sees us... He thinks that we're getting punked by Canada? Really? What are they going to do? Cut off our maple syrup imports?
Well, I mean, Canada doesn't loan his private interest money the way
correct.
Russia does.
And he views anyone that cannot help him. He is a natural. I just finished a book, 400 pages. We're all going to have a big show at the Linda here next month.
Yeah.
400 pages. This guy is a lover of dictatorships. He wants to be a dictator. He was essentially admiring Kim Jong-un's ability to kill people at will. Mm-hmm. He wants to be George the Fourth, right? Or King John, you know, King Donald the First of the United States. And all of the checks and balances in the Constitution were specifically designed for this individual. Because they said, John Adams said, we will have a tyrant as a president.
But it's
and
not working.
Voila.
Congress is not exercising their checks and balances.
There you have it. I guess you
have
to resolve
it. You know, when they write the great history of this era, the Trump will certainly be the dominant player. But chapter two is going to be what happened to the Congress and where how did they allow themselves to loosen the grip on their own responsibilities, morally and otherwise, in this whole episode.
No.
I'm listening with great fan-like deference to the other people, you know, all of whom I think are making a great deal of sense. Malcolm, you thought, as I remember it, that this meeting wasn't going to happen. What happened?
Oh, what happened was two enormous egos all came to the same conclusion, and particularly Kim Jong-un's. I mean, Kim Jong-un is now getting the results, with the exception of reunification, all of the other results the Korean War were designed to give them. They now have viable atomic weapons. They now have strategic balance over South Korea. They have an American president who is willing to deal with them and quite possibly trade away the security of not just South Korea, but all of Asia. For a photo op.
And what he doesn't care about is the vast majority of people living in North Korea, 50% are living with starvation, hunger, starvation, and no access to clean drinking water. And that's just not part of his concern.
You know, Donald Trump has, not even in a way, we know sanctions are going to be relaxed now by China and Russia just because of this meeting. If nothing else happens, and Trump stopping these things, he has actually perpetuated the survival of this regime.
Yeah, and we have said, at least our Secretary of State has said, no regime change.
No.
Which means we will stand behind this terrible dictatorship.
You know, if anyone hasn't watched the film The Darkest Hours about Churchill just after the fall of Neville Chamberlain and how Winston Churchill became prime minister, which is a terrifying film. I mean, if you really understand history, that film scared me.
Yep.
Because I see many parallels today. Donald Trump is a Neville Chamberlain. He gave up everything for his own ego. And he promised almost the security of all of East Asia is on the table if you massage his ego. And let me tell you, Kim Jong-un listens to his intelligence reports. He listens to Chinese advice. Donald Trump, I understand, got this idea of removing U.S. Strategic exercises from Vladimir Putin in January, according to the Wall Street Journal, not from anyone in the United States. We're seeing a realignment of the global order, and Donald Trump is aligning himself with an axis of autocrats. Mm-hmm. He has moved away from the global democratic order.
Right. He's not.
Well, and the great negotiator, which he claims to be.
Yikes.
You know, he did not have to be as effusive in his praise of Kim at the time of the meeting. He's a great man. All of the things we all heard him say based on 38 minutes of discussions with each other. Why? That's like revealing your whole card if you're playing poker. There is no reason for him to be that effusive about the guy. He's still in there negotiating the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. But he's saying ahead of time what a great guy he is.
Well, he's a terrible negotiator. You know, it's the art of the spiel, not the art of the deal. And But I don't think he understands that he could have negotiated, you know, nuclear stability and not suck up to Kim Jong-un the way he did.
It was embarrassing.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be back right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Malcolm Nance, and Ira Fussfeld with us this morning. And we're very happy to have you along for the ride as well. We have some letters. We'll get to those. And we've been talking, of course, about North Korea, in which the president said yesterday, sleep well tonight, America, sleep well tonight. I don't think I've really slept well since November 6, 2016, but I...
Well, I was in the newspaper business, so I would say longer ago than that for me.
But, yeah, well, that's true. That's understandable. Alan, let's go to the letters.
Okay, here's one from John. Trump has clearly broken this panel.
Was I not in this one?
Okay. Well, I don't know.
No, go ahead. I'm going to just make sure.
Don't worry about it. The Trump criticism is fueled with paranoid hyperbole, and panic. By the way, isn't this the same panel that fawned over North Korea during the Olympics?
Well, I remember saying it is a good thing for North Korea and South Korea to be together during the Olympics. It was right when President Trump was gaining altitude on attacking North Korea. I think generally getting opponents to talk is a good thing if it avoids nuclear war, but it doesn't mean you have to validate, you know, the atrocities of a particular country in order to talk to them and have a constructive agreement.
There was a very simple graphic in the New York Times yesterday where it had three pictures, Kim's father and Kim's grandfather, and a very small caption under each one dating back to the grandfather, 1994. And under each caption, it spoke of the Koreans' promise to get rid of nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. And here we are 24 years later, still hasn't happened. And this agreement, to the extent that there's an agreement that he struck the other day, has no language about verification. So how do we know what they're going to do? And then yesterday, when Pompeo is asked about this, he gets nasty to the reporters who are the temerity to ask questions about verification. So to your point, yes, it's great that the sides are meeting, and I don't criticize Trump for meeting Kim, but it looks like he was taken to the cleaners. Mm-hmm. He, as I said earlier, he was much too palsy with this guy. Didn't deserve to be palsy. As Malcolm said, the flags right next to each other was just insulting to us. So how can and going forward, whatever he says, a large segment of the population here and around the world is not going to believe him. Both of them, but in this case,
which is why
they
didn't have staff in the room with them.
Yeah. Let me go to the point of the question that he said that the panel is hyperbolic and against Trump. You know, once a quarter, I'm going to do this little readout to you. As a former intelligence professional, I deal strictly in the world of empiricism. I deal strictly in ground truth and fact as it's analyzed for the defense of this nation within the context of the Constitution of the United States. Okay, no president. I'm not being hyperbolic about Trump. I'm being hyperbolic about the person that's sitting in the seat of the president of the United States. And that person has degraded that seat to the point of almost, you cannot recognize it anymore. George Washington would be spinning in his grave, if he isn't already, at the things that are happening here, the degradation of this presidency. And it is as close as anyone could possibly say that we have moved away from a democracy to an autocracy. I mean, we've literally had State Department remove the word American democratic values from their mission statement. They will no longer be pushing that around the world. So when I see this, whether it's the government of Burundi, the government of Papua New Guinea, or the presidency of the United States, I will call it out exactly as that. This is what Donald Trump is by his own admission in his own tweets. So if you drank the Kool-Aid, that's just too bad, because I'm on par, and we are all on par with all the former heads of intelligence in the United States and practically everyone who has left the Republican Party, former Republicans like myself.
And I think if you're not unsettled, you're not paying enough attention. This is not just international affairs. I also want to point out the attack on immigrants that is happening within our nation. I was on my way to Buffalo last week. I took the train and stopped in Syracuse, and Border Patrol agents got on with guns asking for people's ID. And sometimes they pull people off the Amtrak. This happens every day. And it's all, you know, I was in Grand Central 2 days ago, and you always see the military in uniform with their guns.
Yeah,
the National Guard. And it's like it's normalized. But I do really want to talk a little bit about this atrocity of separating families at the Mexican-U.S. border. It is getting worse every day. Finally, yesterday, some reporters were let into this detention center. MSNBC has done a really good job. People should look it up online. And it's just unbelievable what is going on with these kids. And if people are concerned about that, today at 4:30, there's a rally against the Trump policy of separating children. It's a National Day of Action. So if people are concerned about this, come to the Federal Building in downtown Albany at 4:30 today across from the Palace Theater. And then at 5 o'clock today, people are gathering outside Representative Stefanik's office in Glens Falls on Glen Street, which I think is good to ask Congress, what in the world are you doing to step in? I mean, this is an atrocity. This is a new Trump policy. It didn't exist before, and it's thousands. It's in this one facility in Brownsville, Texas, that MSNBC looked at, 1,400 boys are being held essentially in a prison.
Yeah, I was up way too late last night, but I was, and it's your fault, Judith, because you retweeted something from Kirsten Gillibrand on her statement on this and saying that we cannot allow this. And did you read the comments? The comments from the people were, why aren't you doing anything? We're sending you to do. Why aren't you speaking out? Why are you not doing anything? We need you. Don't just tweet. Do something.
You know, that was this. I think it was one of the facilities that Senator Merkley went to where they called the police. And if you watch Chris Hayes' report, you can watch it live on the feed on MSNBC by going to the Chris Hayes show from last night. They said that facility actually had the capacity of 1,697 boys. They had 1,647. They only had enough space for 50 more boys. And there are 26 facilities like that. First thing he saw as he entered the building was a note inside their like watch station that said, if media arrives, one, call the police. Two, call the communications officer. the public relations officer for this group. This is disgraceful. I didn't spend my 3 decades fighting the worst people around the world to come back to the United States to find subcontractors and the immigration organization acting like the Gestapo.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Malcolm, because we're getting a ton of mail here from veterans who are saying exactly the same thing. This is not why I put my life in danger to come back and find this.
They should stand up and speak up.
And they are.
On these detention centers, you know, I do want to point out that some of them existed prior to the Trump administration, and they housed truly unaccompanied minors entering this country. Yeah. However, we've created a whole generation of unaccompanied minors by purposefully separating children from their parents.
In the last 500 days.
So in Brownsville, about 1/3 of the people in this facility are because of the new Trump policy. They're bursting at the seams, and now the Trump administration is talking about creating tents, outdoor tent cities to house these young kids.
Interesting point I learned about that. The facilities that are under contract right now are actual certified registered child care facilities. The tent cities will not be.
Right.
They will be under the control of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they will just be holes out in the middle of nowhere.
So let me just take chapter 2 of Ira's book is about when the great history is written about Congress and the Senate. So let me go back to my question.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
What should they be doing? Well, what should Kirsten Gillibrand, what should the Republicans, what should the Democrats, what should they be doing?
There's so much they should be doing. One is Senator Feinstein has a bill in that I think 38 or so senators are co-sponsoring,
right,
stopping this practice of the Trump administration. They need an emergency to get this done. And I don't know why Republicans who claim that they are people of faith are not jumping in and forming a bipartisan coalition here. They're not.
You know why, Judith.
Yes.
You know why. We saw it yesterday. We saw the primaries. We see the fact that they do not want to give up their seats to do the right thing. There is no profile in courage here.
So we need a bill in Congress. The ACLU has sued on this, and that case is moving. It should be expedited. We need Kirsten Gillibrand and Chuck Schumer to go to these facilities and bear witness. Even though Senator Merkley got kicked out, he put a spotlight on this. And there are dozens and dozens of these facilities in the United States. It's not just Brownsville. And I think there needs to be an emergency mobilization.
There does. But I think that it needs to go way further than that. These congressmen and senators all need to get together in groups and storm one of these facilities. I don't mean storm the gates, but get to those doors and say, we are the elected authorities of the United States government. You will open this facility right now, all right? And then let's see the what happens.
An unannounced visit.
With all the media that they can have. And I want to see the administration stop senators and congressmen from coming into the facilities. Then start going after their budget. You know, it just is insulting to me that people who are supposed to be doing law enforcement, immigration, customs, appear to have been co-opted by the president as his own enforcement force, especially after he got their endorsement during the election. And I'm sorry, he's giving them equipment, and this is not what Customs and Border Patrol and enforcement should be doing, ripping children from the arms of their parents. We do that stuff overseas. We get suicide bombers.
He's being a tough guy.
That's ridiculous. It is against all the values of this country.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Alan has a lot of letters. We want to get to those. We'll do that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We're going to go to letters. Just a quick reminder, keep them short, to the point, and on topic. We ask that because we can get to a lot more if you just do it 140 characters or less. All right. We'll go through the old Twitter rules. Go ahead, Alan.
Aline says, go, Malcolm. How wonderful and refreshing to hear, Malcolm. Every day, my Mexican friends here in Tulum, Mexico, where I live, ask me why the Americans support Trump, and it is truly hard for me to explain it to them. I can only tell them that the majority of us do not, and leave it at that. Our reputation has been blackened. Keith says, good morning, panel. Are the guest panelists from New York? Are all the guest panelists from New York 19? You're talking to the man from Massachusetts.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, Malcolm and I. No. Yeah. Yeah. Ira. Yeah, three out of four. The guests
Alan.
Are all 19.
Not Alan.
Big story about the Democratic primary race in the Times yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
It's, yeah. It's a major race.
What was the question?
Well, we were there first, to be honest with you. We did a
very good debate.
A tremendous debate here. Ignored by you know who, but they did cover the Kingston debate. I suppose you should thank them for something. Good morning, panel. I write, call and fax my Congressman John Fassler, who has abdicated his responsibility as check on the executive branch. I think we should have a panel of guests, all from New York 19. The New York State primary is 11 days from now. And this, I love this sentence, and we've had to deal with this. Can the panel share who they are like or voting for in the primary? Well, I personally don't think that's an appropriate thing for us to do. But
I'm not registered in either party because I always have tried to maintain that independence. I don't want to get involved with the primary.
Yes, I'm getting a lot of mail saying, Alan, please tell us who to vote for. No,
yeah, I get that too on my Twitter feed because I've got, and the worst part is I get it from like people in Ohio who are from Kingston,
but you,
right?
But you
who are ready to vote.
So you haven't endorsed anyone?
I'm not allowed to endorse, but I'm a registered voter and I know who I'm going to vote for.
That's okay. Fair. That's
but you know,
fair.
Come on, I'm a military guy, combat vet, intelligence guy.
I gotcha. Get it. I get the hint.
There's a few people actually.
Re-Korea agreement, and that's from Ruth. Whatever the actual outcome of the promises made at the Korea meeting, Trump has achieved his objective as a self-serving narcissist by saying that there will now be no nukes on the peninsula, and by all media at airing that quote, Trump the salesman has framed the perception, the more it is repeated, whether it's praise or criticism, the more it is reinforced. He does not need to consider the flames he might be leaving in his wake. As far as he is concerned, the vague terms have allowed wide room for calling it a personal win.
Well, there have been previous written agreements that go further than the one-pager that they are trumpeting from the other day. But again, just to kind of bring this back, if this provides some stability and avoids nuclear confrontation, it's a good thing.
But the second half of your comment, which I also agree with, is if they violate whatever agreement he thinks is violated,
he will overreact.
Trump is going to go nuts.
Yep.
Whitney says, panel, good morning all. With the Trump's love and fascination of dictatorships, I question if, in quotes, if he is defeated in 2020, will the U.S. once again see a complete and peaceful transfer of power? I don't see that he has the ability to accept defeat. And that's from Whitney in Queensbury. Now, that's an interesting letter, considering his trashing of Obama and even the Republicans who came before him. This is how it ends, folks. All right. Michael says, Bill says, of Michael Bolton. Any word on how Warhawk Michael Bolton feels about Trump?
John Bolton.
It says Michael here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Michael Bolton's a singer,
yeah. About Trump giving away the store for a photo op, and that's from Bill in High Falls.
Well, I don't think Bolton probably likes this. I mean, this is out of character for Bolton, but Trump doesn't listen to Bolton. Trump doesn't listen to anyone.
I think Bolton just loves the position of power that he's in right now, and he is on jihad against
Iran. He's keeping shut.
I mean, his bigotry is has always been front and center. He just brought in a deputy from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, or was it the other one? There's another one that's a very extremely Islamophobic, bigoted organization, which is just insane. I mean, people in my community have nothing to do with people like this. And this is about Islam versus the West, as far as Bolton is concerned. And if he could nuke that country, I think he would.
Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
Yeah.
Yes.
John says, question for Malcolm. How much control does China and Russia have over North Korea? Is it possible these two are using their vassal state to raise Trump's approval rating in the U.S. enough to reduce chances for impeachment and ensure he stays in office because that works to their benefit? And that's from John in Half Moon.
No, I don't think they have as much control as people think they do. China's impact is mainly economic. And China can starve or make that place as plentiful as they want. Russia is selling oil illegally to North Korea through ships that are cross decking, as we say in the military, oil at sea. So they're making straight cash. But let me tell you, North Korea does have cash reserves, and they have the ability now to make money beyond their wildest dreams. If Iran were ever wanting to get a very quick nuclear capacity, they could put $100 billion on the table for one working device, or the framework for a working device, and be well on their way to being a nuclear power in a matter of months if North Korea ever, you know, decided that they wanted to go that way. But now China has economic leverage over North Korea. I think the food is going to flow now.
We heard from Bob. While I agree with Malcolm that Trump's claim that the North Korea nuclear threat is over is probably absurd, I'm wondering how he ranks the North Korea threat versus Pakistan's. Those are the nukes I'm most concerned about.
You know, I used to make our friends who were in the National Mission Forces, that's what we call Delta Force and SEAL Team 6, and I one day joked, I said, hey, you know, you guys are spending a lot of time hunting down one guy and in a country. Somebody at some point needs to start thinking about doing parajumps onto North Korea, onto Pakistan's nuclear weapons facilities if they were suddenly to lose control. And he goes, you don't think we do that? There are many countries out there which could lose control of these weapons if a violent governmental change occurs.
Sure.
Pakistan, they have a good intelligence agency. They have good nuclear weapons controls as far as you're concerned. But if the government collapses, you know, you have a country there with 60 plus atomic bombs that we know work. By the way, they only tested 5 atomic bombs in Pakistan before they put their arsenal online. North Korea's tested their 5 bombs. They don't need any of those facilities anymore.
Trump's choice of allies comes a letter from, I guess, Lori. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, has announced a strengthened northern border strategy that it claims will help combat terrorism and help facilitate travel and trade at its border with Canada. Just when you think this administration can't get any stranger, thank you, Roundtable. Nothing strange here.
That's crazy. I mean, that's... okay. I think they are just militarizing ICE. If you think that the Canadian border, I have been in counterterrorism 30 plus years. If you think that that is where the font of all terrorism is coming from, that's just as insane as people who were telling me over the last 2 years that ISIS has been infiltrating dozens of people across the Mexican border. You know, if you have a threat in this country, it's going to be an American. Okay, and all virtually every major internal terrorist attack that's happened here, domestic and foreign, has been an American citizen.
I'm just waiting for the president to turn on Sweden, Norway.
And well, he will if he doesn't win the Nobel Prize.
If he doesn't get the Nobel. If he doesn't get the
right.
Nobel.
It's that syrup. He's got something about Canadian syrup.
Dan says, alternative motivation for North Korea. The journal Science has reported 3D satellite imagery of North Korea's nuclear test site, Mount Mantap. Adds credence to seismic data, which suggests that the top of Mount Mantap collapsed after the September 2nd, 2017 hydrogen bomb test.
Yes.
North Korea might well be willing to halt nuclear development because its test facility may be unusable now.
Actually, in fact, they're done. Like I said in the previous segment, most of these nations, India tested 6 atomic bombs. Pakistan tested 5 atomic bombs. North Korea has tested 5 atomic bombs. The last one being a viable hydrogen bomb that had the exact same explosive yield as a U.S. Minuteman III missile, 160 megatons or kiloton weapon. They don't need it anymore. They have the bombs. Where they're a nuclear power, we're going to have to deal with it.
Okay, and a very fast love letter to Judith from Scott. Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Dear beloved panel and beloved Judith, are you heartened that more and more conservatives are finally coming out against Pruitt? In the last 34 hours, Inhofe questioned Pruitt's continuation, as did the National Review. Is Pruitt's time finally coming? Joe's going to warn us. We're going to be going right to a to a break. So
yeah, it's a real change. We now have conservative voices saying that Scott Pruitt is embarrassing President Trump, which is true. Remember, Pruitt is under 12 separate federal ethics investigations. The other thing that changed this week is when reporters would call the EPA press office asking for comment on the latest controversy, and there was another one yesterday involving using EPA resources to get Mrs. Pruitt a job at a conservative organization in Washington called the Judicial Crisis Network. The EPA press people now say, I'm referring you to outside counsel.
Very quickly, this is for Judith. Why is Scott Pruitt still in office? I'm not reading the rest of the letter.
The oil and gas industry and evangelicals are telling Trump to keep Pruitt in office because it's, you know, we're following the shiny objects of all the ethics scandals, but in his day job, he is decimating the EPA. Mm. He's making sure there's no action on climate change when we urgently need action. So the oil and gas industry, the chemical industry, love Scott Pruitt, and they're telling the White House to keep him in place.
He also seems to be, though, a major sounding board for the president.
Yes.
We're reading in several articles in both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times that he regularly will get on the phone with Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager Scott Pruitt, and there was somebody else that were the three people that he communicates and talks to the most.
Right.
He's the regulatory wrecking ball.
Yeah.
And the EPA is their bete noire. He wants to destroy that agency, and that guy is the head of the evil protection agency.
But eventually it's going to catch up, right? I mean, there's going to have to be a point.
Pruitt is losing cases in court. He is attempting to repeal, at this point, about 70 major environmental regulations. Environmental groups and state attorneys general are suing and winning. I think the ethics scandal are just incredible. But even if Pruitt goes, and as I've said, it's not a question of whether he's going to be fired or resigns. It's a question of when will he be indicted. I think that's a real
possibility. He's the Michael Cohen of the environment.
Right. I like that. But the problem is the number two guy at EPA, Andy Wheeler, is just as bad. He's a Beltway insider who represents coal and oil. And Pruitt has put in a leadership team. Everyone is from Monsanto, DuPont, coal industry, oil industry, gas industry. And so the really anti-environmental, anti-public health policies will continue with or without a Pruitt.
How did we get here?
All right. Well, we mull that over. Or muller that over. We will take a break and we'll come back right after this. Listening to the Frank Vignola Trio, who is kicking off the Berkshire Gateway Jazz Weekend in Lee on Friday, otherwise known as tomorrow.
This weekend.
Yes.
You know what else is this weekend? The Great Clearwater Hudson River Revival.
That's right.
Saturday and Sunday at
16th and 17th.
Croton Point Park. Great event for Father's Day. Just go to the Clearwater website or just
if
show
I
up.
If I ever have an event, I want to let Judith know because she does such a great job promoting stuff on that. That's
she
the
does.
Third event you've promoted today. That's great.
And I'm very subtle about it, too.
Well, no,
but we had,
she can't be subtle.
We had the president of Clearwater on a few weeks ago.
That's
Joe
right.
kindly interviewed Betsy Garthwaite, which was terrific. And praying for good weather, this is a big fundraising weekend for Clearwater. And the musical lineup is
supposed
extraordinary.
Supposed to be pretty good. Sunday may be a little hot, but it's supposed to be really good. So all good stuff. Alan, you get a lot of letters.
Let's go. Do, Joe. Thank you. Susan says, another rally today. Good morning, panel. Yes, our legislators need to storm the gates of the 100 facilities that are warehousing these stolen children. There will also be a rally today in Northampton at 5:30 at City Hall near the Academy of Music. And that's from Susan. Susan in Sutherland. Mary says, the welfare of children being held. My greatest concern after a career in child welfare is the physical and emotional health of these children. Have they had medical and mental health assessments? What is the level of supervision? What is the adult-to-child ratio for care? Are the care provider able to communicate in the children's language? How are the children protected from each other? What is the education requirement, if any?
Is, you know, you were talking before about figuratively storming the gates the congressman should be doing. Is there anybody who doubts and who knew him that our friend, the late Congressman Hinchey, would have been right first one there organizing people to go
Thank you for raising Maurice Hinchey. He would be there.
This is something that he would have jumped
on. And this facility that reporters were let into yesterday presumably is the best of all of them.
Right.
I want to know what's happening with the really little children. There was a report yesterday that a mom was breastfeeding her baby, and the baby was taken from her arms. So how's the baby going to get nutrition? The mom is not going to be able to pump breast milk. I mean, these are practical but crucial issues that will affect the psychological and physical durability of these children for their lives.
I'll tell you, I think that the Congress should demand through hearings that ICE come up there and prove to them with beyond a shadow of a doubt that they have a matching service to where they could put that child back in the arms of that parent within 24 hours.
Because they're losing.
If they're lost.
They're losing the kids in the system.
Then they're let out. We have a malfunction. And don't worry, because the first stories of abuse or rape are going to come out, and this whole thing's going to collapse under its own weight. But this is a disgrace.
Harlene says, Malcolm, I would like Malcolm to talk about the fact that the right-wing militia support Donald Trump and also Eric Prince of Blackwater, their tie to Russia, has to do with the fact that Russia has always had trouble with their non-white minority.
Well, we could talk about this for hours. I'm sure Joe's going to be interviewing me eventually about The Plot to Destroy Democracy, my new book, which I have three chapters on the American alt-right and how they are. It's insane the amount of support they have in Russia and that they coordinate with alt-right groups around the world. If you've ever seen the movie Captain America, and the mythological enemy is a group that took over after the Nazis called Hydra, and their motto is Hail Hydra, right? That's true. There is a European-American alliance of the alt-right that is terrifying, and Eric Prince is, you know, he's out there, you know, supporting the president.
And he's Betsy DeVos's brother,
head
of the education.
Education.
Another agency really under attack.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because who needs that?
But okay, he's brought in the best and the brightest.
So, Tom, hi, panel, and thank you. It seems to me that the panel's opinions are becoming more and more leftward. You need to get more balanced opinion on your show, please. If you have any more liberal, you guys are going to fall off the left coast and lose even your moderate listeners. And that's Tom from Queensbury.
You know, I was a Republican my whole life. I have some news for you. I was conservative. But, you know, facts have, if you want to say facts have a liberal bias, then that's it. This nation was started as a liberal democracy. So, you know, you're using it as a pejorative. I'm using it as just the place where facts reside. You'll just have to deal with
it. And where are the conservative voices on separating families? Where are the conservative voices on not publicly embracing a dictator in North Korea? I think that's the bigger question.
I'd not to hear him justify.
It's not really a left or a right. It's what are our democratic principles?
Okay, Greg says, Mr. Nance knows his stuff, but his partisanship does not seem to bleed into everything. I also think he overuses his military background to act like his positions are unassailable.
Well, they're unassailable because they're correct.
And Ellen says, Customs Enforcement on Amtrak. I'm shocked by Judith's report that she saw customs officials checking people's ID on the Amtrak train in New York. In my mind, I pictured all these movies of World War II with Gestapo going through the trains asking for papers and pulling people off. How terrifying is this? Is anyone in the media covering this? Is this legal? I don't think so. Please talk about this further.
Well, it is legal.
Yeah, and there have been some press reports of Customs and Border Patrol pulling people off of Greyhound buses. They were on Amtrak with very visible large guns going from car to car and holding up the train in Little Syracuse for 15 minutes, and they didn't take anyone off. And I think Malcolm is right. This train ends in Toronto. But why you're looking at
in
people's...
Syracuse.
Yeah, in Syracuse, I just don't
the
get
one
it.
Thing you are seeing, though, is people posting the first thing when they see the agents come into the car, people are pulling out their cell phones and taking video, and they're posting that video, and they're putting it on Facebook and on Instagram and on Twitter. And it's, I think that is helpful because that's how I've found out most of it, that it seems to be a regular occurrence.
Well, you know, you do have freedom of speech. And let me tell you, I haven't seen it, But if I see it, I'm going to say something about it.
What would you say?
Well, I happen to know right is right and wrong is wrong. What I would say is this what your job is? Is this what you how you want us to see you? You're supposed to be a law enforcement officer, and, you know, they'll whip out the whole I'm just following orders, right? But, you know, especially if you're a veteran, I'm a combat veteran, and I will use that as part of my platform here. We know what's right and wrong. We do this overseas. People come out and throw rocks and bombs and all sorts of other things about us. It is not our values. We should not be doing this.
And VA Virginia says, okay, Malcolm, is there any way the public can find the location of these facilities that are housing immigrant children? Surely there could and would be local protests and sit-ins, particularly from women. There must be something the public can do to stop this child abuse by our government.
You know, in Argentina, when they had the desaparecidos, the people who were disappeared by the Argentinian government, you know what broke that government?
Women.
The mothers of the people who were disappeared walked silently every day holding up signs of their missing children to the point where the government couldn't stand it and actually started attacking these women. You know, again, we're one of the few countries in the world where you have a right to say what you feel. All right. I spent my entire life defending that. Go do it. If you see it and that's the way you do it peacefully, do it nonviolently. But go out and make your voice heard. And if you want to call attention to these facilities, I would shame the people that go in there don't speak for me.
And by the way, it's happened in the past. I mean, you take something like the Clamshell Alliance, and I think a lot of the reason that so many of the nuclear plants are closing down now is because people got on their hind legs and said no.
You know, when Condoleezza, when we had Hurricane Katrina and Condoleezza Rice was on Broadway watching Camelot, Spamalot on Broadway, a woman stood up and shamed her and said, what are you doing here? People are literally drowning. Mm-hmm. You know, it's time to, you know, make your ire known as opposed to taking your phone
and
out.
And don't forget the tragedy in Puerto Rico that continues to unfold. Yeah.
And John says, panel, what I'm truly curious about is who is coaching Trump through all of these hugely impactful decisions. North Korea, trade tariffs, abandoning important allies. I don't think he's smart enough to be maneuvering through these waters on his own. And why is his party allowing this damage to pile up? Let me just take the last part of this. They want to stay in office. It's that simple. And he's got a lot of support. You can see it in the polls from the Republicans. The Republican Party is way over 75%, I believe, in favor of what Trump is doing.
Well, the answer to the first part of the question, by all accounts, he may be hearing other people, but he's not listening to other people, and he's flying by the seat of his pants. He could judge, he said, how Kim was going to be within the first minute. Right. It's all attitude, he says. And this is the guy running the country. It's incredible.
And Tracy says, Tom Barak, can Malcolm speak to the records of Tom Barak meeting with the Saudi to convince them that Trump would be their guy, and how that may have influenced Trump's dismantling of the Iran nuclear agreement, other than he just wants to undo all of Obama's achievements? Tracy in Warwick.
Yeah, we don't have enough time to answer that question.
The book.
All you can say, it certainly is in my book, The Plot to Destroy Democracy. But all I can say is this, the world, and to your point, Ian, the world has figured him out, that he is viable. That the reason Obama had so much trouble with these dictators was the man's integrity was intact. You could not buy him. You could not buy any president from George Washington to Barack Obama. This guy has made it clear he's on the table. And he does it through his actions and through his own admissions, the emoluments violations, the nepotism with his children, and his love of dictators. He wants to be a dictator. And this is quite possibly, again, the first autocratic president of the United States.
We should remind people who Tom Barak is. Yeah.
Yes, that's important.
His buddy who brought Paul Manafort into the campaign.
Right.
His supposed longtime friend. And it's not just the president, as you say, it's people in his orbit. It's Michael Cohen was paid large sums of money to lobby the president
and as long as you raise
his children.
As long as you raise that, Judith, we're getting out of time here. But there is a lot of scuttlebutt about Cohen flipping. Now, firing his lawyers and hiring other lawyers and dealing with people in the Southern District. So that's a hell of a story this morning.
That poor guy, because he really thought he was Tom Hagen. you know, from The Godfather, the consigliere of Michael Corleone. He's not, and he's done. I mean, there's more than enough on this guy. They only gave 167 documents were considered legally binding.
Less than 1%.
Out of 3.7 million pieces of communication. His life is finished. I mean, I've been on this type of investigation where you go through the, you know, wiretaps and phones and things like that.
Why is his life over if, in fact, Malcolm, you know, he flips and he gets a walk?
If he flips, then he's the beautiful part about that. He shifts to another movie. Then he gets to be Ray Liotta in Goodfellas, right? Who goes witness protection?
I'm going to start quoting romantic comedies.
Yeah, but I tell you what, I know you were tongue in cheek, but I would never have connected Michael Cohen with the phrase "that poor guy." I don't have any sympathy for this guy. Right. Long before Stormy Daniels, long before any of this, people would see him on TV, and he was a nasty SOB. He was nasty to reporters and vile
and
to reporters. Yes, and so this guy, if he deserves to be put away, him I don't like.
Him you don't like. Okay, and Janos says in Great Barrington, some of you really sound like warmongers that believe regime change is the only answer. Look at what that got you in the Middle East over the past 30 years. Give peace a chance.
Nobody in this room. I don't believe in regime change. Mm-mm.
Except this regime through the ballot box.
Okay, and Lou says, for vocalizing my exact sentiments, oh, thank you, Ira, for vocalizing my exact sentiments about the soul-selling Republicans in Congress. They are making a sham of our Constitution. Every time I fume about something Trump said or did, I am equally disgusted with Congress just standing by in order to win their next election. We certainly have talked that enough. You're going to have some explaining to do, if not in this life, then in the next. I like that. Also, so glad you have Malcolm on today. Thanks for all you do. Catherine says, broken panel, in response to the letter writer saying that the panel is broken, paranoid, et cetera, et cetera. To the contrary, the panel is the lifeline of sanity for many of us. Yes, things that are that serious. Kudos to the panel for taking the brunt of the 1,000 cuts we have been given over the last 2 years. Thank you. And that's from Catherine. And Karen says, dear Malcolm, do you think Trump discussed real estate projects in North Korea with Kim Jong-un during the closed meeting? But you know, there was a mention
beaches.
Of that yesterday, yes. Saying he wanted to go into joint projects on hotels.
The whole coast is landmine.
The beach.
All the beaches are landmine.
I'm going to wait until
Can I make one last comment? I like being in a room full of adults who can speak soundly and with decency and dignity about what ails this country. We don't need to have a bunch of crazy sycophants toeing the party line or being a cult.
Heather says, starting a war, Alan was right. I've long held that Trump wants and needs the war to deflect and manipulate. Alan has said the same as have others. Here's what I see. Trump promised an end to war games, which is poorly defined. The generals and the vice president have said military exercises will proceed in South Korea. You know, they do that all the time. The president says one thing, then he gets the other guys to say the other thing.
No one's going to notice.
Yeah. The exercises continue. Kim Jong-un takes this as an act of aggression, and boom, we are at war. And Michael says, please explain how the parents of Korean War vets might have requested that the president bring home the remains of their sons and daughters, as Trump has asserted. I don't get the man. Mike from Clifton Park.
We talked about that on the media project. Somebody calculated that during the campaign, if the parents of Korean War vets talked to Trump, they would have had to have been somewhere between 110 and 120 mm-hmm. years old.
Mm-hmm. If you were 18 mm-hmm. years old and you had a child who was 18 years old, you'd be 101.
Right, right.
Look, the man's pathological liar. We all know that. That's been documented.
Pinocchio.
3,000 plus lies in the last year. 5 on average per day. To him, whatever he says is the truth.
What did you
and
say,
that's
Joe?
What's
I'm
dangerous.
Sorry.
I said add one to the list, Washington Post.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're out of time. My thanks to the entire panel, Ira Fussfeld, Malcolm Nance, Judith Enk, Alan Chartok. Thank you all very much for being with us today. A reminder that tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from the Berkshire Theater Group's Fitzpatrick Stage in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, to celebrate Berkshire Theater's 90th anniversary. We're very excited about that, and we'll be celebrating tomorrow, so join us for that, and we'll have more show right after this.
Great.